Circling our warhead. Fired another beam of light at it, which struck the warhead.
Most peculiar, mama. The Virtually Strange Network presents Strange Days Indeed, your premier source for UFO information, with your host, Errol Bruce Knapp.
Yes. These are strange days indeed, and this program reflects the UFO side of the strangeness. Welcome to those of you listening here in Canada, around the world on the web via the live stream, and to you listening via the podcast, the program number 394. Tonight, a round table, and you via the phone with the folks here in studio this evening. Sue Darrick is in studio. Sue of Para Researchers Ontario, evening.
Hi, Errol. Always great to be talking to you.
And it's good to have you back here.
Yeah, we are so happy to be in studio.
Oh, perky people. That's just what I need tonight. We'll have more of that. Matthew Didier of PSYCHAN, Paranormal Studies and Investigations Canada, is also here.
Well, I promise to tone things down a little so perky.
Not so perky?
Yeah.
Well, as long as your head doesn't go from side to side. And also joining us in studio, he's been on this program, I think, once before by telephone, is Wayne St. John, musician, singer, composer, actor, man of panpipes, an amazing website, and an interest in absolutely everything. The first time I saw Wayne was back in 1969. Let's turn your mic on. There.
Sure.
There.
The Royal Alex.
The Royal Alex.
Indeed.
Yeah, and you had a big fro.
Right. That was me.
He was in hair. That's the first time I saw Wayne St. John. And then, of course, you did so many things. I mean, with our mutual buddy Keith Hampshire.
Right.
On Music Machine.
Yeah.
And gospel choirs and talent management. And he has an interest in UFOs, too. It's remarkable, ladies and germs.
Indeed.
What goes on around us, and you suddenly discover things way after the fact.
Yeah, absolutely.
As you and I, when we met with Tom Theophanis.
That's correct.
When we went to look at that crop circle.
Right.
You remember that?
I certainly do.
Yeah.
I wish it was real.
Yeah, it was the boot prints in from the dirt road that was kind of a clue.
Yeah, subtle hint that there might have been a little chicanery going on.
Yeah, sugar canery.
Broken sugar canery.
Although years ago, I don't know if you remember. Oh my, was it the Paro What's It Society of Toronto? Was on Sherbourne Street.
Psychical Society.
Yeah. Phyllis? Oh, my.
George and Iris Owen.
George and Iris Owen, thank you. See?
See, there's benefits to being perky.
Perky pays off. So I went over to George and Iris Owen's house one night, and one afternoon, I forget how I ended up there, and we were sitting talking about table tapping and various things. And they got this phone call from someone out in the Kitchener area and said that there was this landing site in Indian Corn, in Mays, in the corner of a farmer's field. So we leapt into cars and we drove out there immediately. Took however long it takes to drive to Kitchener, west of the city. And we get there, and the landing site, it's a big circular depression in full-grown corn. It was about to be harvested. It was in the corner of the field, and closing the triangle was a power line where in the past the farmer had a well that pumped water to water the cattle. So there was a cattle trough there. And this thing had landed between the fence and the crossroads that was there and this power line. And all the corn was pushed down in this world circular shape. And what was really interesting, and I had some of the cobs for a while, was that they were bent over at a right angle and corkscrew twisted. You know the stalk on corn, how
yeah.
thick that is.
Yeah.
Right? But it was bent over and twisted like a drill bit.
Sounds authentic to me.
All the way around the outside of the circle.
So
not just one
did anyone
one.
Actually see that land, or was it just the
no,
crop
no,
circles?
No, no, it was the farmer called it in.
Oh, so he saw the craft come down.
Well, no. Something had pushed everything down, and then the outside of this circle was all of this corn cobs that had been bent over at an angle.
Well, what I find of interest is how they were bent over. I believe that there is a protocol now set up to determine whether a crop circle is real based in part on the shape of how the actual crop has been bent. And it seems that these nodules are almost turned. I'm not sure exactly what it is like to describe to the audience, but I do know that they've been doing some really good work in Michigan.
Levengood, yes.
Levengood has. And we now do have a means to determine whether crop circles are, in fact, an authentic crop circle or what I would call an anomaly, or someone out, trying to hoax
yeah,
or create art
stoppers.
Or whatever they're mm-hmm. doing. Yeah, so that's exciting stuff.
I had Wendy Talbot on here mm-hmm. a while back. And
Nancy,
thank you. See, this cold. I know I should have called Julian tonight, earlier this afternoon, said, hey, listen, let's do a reprise, because I'm not feeling well.
Well, aren't you glad I'm here, though?
Yes,
I'm here for you, Errol.
You know, I've had a Sue in my life once before, and she always saved my buttocks. And here's another Sue doing it for me tonight. Thank you, Sue Derek, and Matthew Didier, and Wayne St.
Hey.
John. When Nancy Talbot was on, she was saying that the temperatures required to make those little change the molecular changes to crop in crop circles in agriglyphs is about 800 degrees Fahrenheit. And if you 800 degrees Fahrenheit anything within a very short space of time, you have nothing but ash.
Well, you have carbon.
Carbon. Yeah. Well, yeah.
Yeah.
So a lot of these crops, and another way of telling, yeah, another way of telling if they're genuine, well, if they're in quotation marks genuine, is to take a look under a microscope at the cellular structure of these plants. Also, the soil outside or inside a crop circle, too, also looks as if it's been subjected to those temperatures.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, there's something maybe someone around here can answer. Has anyone looked at the life? Because there's life in all soil. The minute you get into any kind of field that you have crops or grass or any type of thing uh-huh. growing, there's always going to be some kind of life dwelling
microbes
within.
Microbes or whatever.
Has anyone done a real study on that?
I know they have been doing soil samples as far as the group in Michigan. And again, I would absolutely highly recommend, if you're interested in crop circles, to do a web search on Nancy Talbot and BLT Research and look at what they've done. I mean, this is absolutely scientifically valid work that proves that we do have an anomaly with certain crop circles. Now, whether or not they are alien related, that's speculation at this point, but we definitely have an anomaly with some of them. I think it's highly fascinating work.
The voice of Sue Derek, also in studio, Matthew Didier and Wayne St. John. And the phone seems to sort of be functioning. And we'll get to Dave Furlott after the news break. I think that's what we'll do. Because we have room to... we have wiggle room.
Wiggle room is good.
Wiggle room is always good. So that's any more on crop circles? Table here? No? Nobody on the phone about crop circles? No. 1-866-866-7387. Cattle mutes is some interesting this week. Tales of mysterious livestock mutilations go back, way back on the Colorado flatlands, back to at least 1967 outside of Alamosa, where Snippy the horse died a very strange death. Come to last Monday to the parched land near this tiny town of Alamosa, just 40 miles from the Kansas border, and Chuck Bowen, a rancher and photographer, gazes across the 13,000 acres that his family has owned since the 1940s. And two of his cows have died freaky deaths. And then he hears the word alien and he smiles. It's kind of hard, frankly, for down-to-earth Bowen to imagine why extraterrestrial beings would hover over his remote meadow, carefully snatch away the faces of two cows, and then dart back into the twinkling stars. And yet Bowen wonders what on earth could have killed his Angus cows and surgically removed the skin from the same side of both cows' faces, leaving the carcasses otherwise intact in the undisturbed grass around them. The grass around their legs was still upright, still tall, he said. When an animal dies, it usually thrashes around and disturbs the ground. This was like the cows had been gently laid down in the grass, like they'd been lowered.
Mm.
Nasty, ugly pictures, but nevertheless fascinating.
It's unnerving, Errol. To me, it is. I look into all sorts of different types of paranormal topics, everything from UFOs to ghosts to psychical experiences, and I have to admit that the cattle mutes really do disturb me. We did do one case about 5 years ago in the Peterborough area, which was the scene of a UFO flap in the 1970s, though we cannot really connect UFOs to the investigation we conducted, but it involved a female cow that had recently birthed and was literally snapped in half, drained of all its blood, or pretty much most of its blood. Yet there was no blood on the scene. The rancher at the time speculated maybe it was a bear, but there was no evidence as far as the provincial investigation that a bear was involved. And this animal literally had its spine snapped in half and was drained of its blood. We found another case about a year later, also a female cow that at that time was getting close to birthing or calving. So we found that an interesting sort of a connection between the fact that these were all seem to be female cows, and I did look into it further, but I have to admit, to me it's disturbing. I found that a very disturbing investigation to go through, and for those that might be more interested, it is completely documented on our website, so you can go have a read, but yeah, I find the cattle mutes disturbing.
Para researchers
of Ontario.
Ontario.org, is that the way? Pararesearchers.org. That's the website to go through. You have a lot of interesting stuff there. And you, both Matthew and Sue, are very knowledgeable about a lot of things. And on another program that we used to do here, they were regulars, and we talked about all kinds of, well, even ghosty things, too.
Yep. Yeah.
And not enough time maybe to get into it immediately, but perhaps after the news break at the bottom of the hour and after Dave Frelott, if one of us can make a mental note on paper, we can come back and talk about that. Because Matthew was involved in a discussion on UFO updates last week.
Yep.
Talking about technology used in ghost detection.
Yeah, amongst other things,
yeah. And very similar to some of the technology that's being recommended for UFO investigation, too.
Yes.
And about as successful.
Yeah. And about as used as properly. Yeah.
I was going to ask you, Sue, the cattle that you saw, the female or whatever it was, were the eyes still in the head? Did they remove the eyes as well?
The eyes, I believe, were intact. I didn't actually see the cow, but I had seen pictures of it as it was being loaded, and it literally fell in half. Again, this is a 2,000-pound animal.
It's hard to fathom that.
You're thinking about the liters and quarts of blood that had to have been removed, yet there was very little blood on the scene.
Hmm.
And another interesting thing about the case is there were other animals that were obviously on this farm, and including a dog, which it's interesting because the dog never barked. I mean, there was silence.
Mm.
Yeah.
Well, and that's what we need to do now. I hate to interrupt this. Maybe we'll come back to that again if
certainly
you have more questions, Wayne St. John.
Sure.
are strange days indeed on UFO News Radio. Here with his take on it is Dave Furlott.
When will we get a picture, either motion or still, of some UFO that will prove to be the smoking gun, as many call it? The image that will prove beyond a shadow of a doubt that UFOs exist. When? And what can the image be that will convince the diehard skeptics that this image cannot be deemed to be something else? It's not a mistaken rocket booster or some top-secret aircraft or swamp gas or even fast-moving pelicans. What's it going to take to convince everyone who sees it that the image is a real UFO? And here's one. What will the image be? Some people won't consider it a real UFO unless it is obviously some craft that is piloted by an extraterrestrial being or beings. Does this mean it's going to have to be some kind of cruise ship where everyone stands around on deck or at portholes waving to us? Or perhaps the skeptics would prefer to have a scene out of Independence Day, or maybe a scene like that out of The Day the Earth Stood Still. Others would consider any object or light that can't be readily identified as the UFO image. Problem there is the skeptibunkers say that a piece of dirt in the gate of the camera should be considered a UFO because it can't be identified and it appears to be flying. Oh, and I love some of the reasons that the thousands of still and motion pictures of UFOs simply cannot be real. It's too sharp, ergo it has to be a model, or a hubcap, or a toy, or a double exposure, or etc. It's not sharp enough. Can't make out what it is. Could be a smudge, or a cloud, or a bright light, or a reflection, and so on and so on. Now, that can't be a real UFO, it's only lights. They're aircraft lights, or they're flares floating down to Earth, or there's some light inside of a balloon sent up to fool us, or... You see, the problem with images of UFOs is that everyone has their own little pet idea of what a UFO should look like. Some, like the what's now being called the classic saucer shape, kind of like Coke Classic or Classic Lay's potato chips, you know? While some others are expecting the image of a real UFO to be a triangle or an orb. Others expect the real image to be something like the motherships out of Independence Day. Oh, and if you think that is a problem for ufologists, imagine how much of a problem it is for skeptibunkers, who denounce every image as being either a hoax, some normal everyday thing, or simply a photographic mistake. For them, they'd have to be holding the camera while the object in question posed for them, or while it landed in front of them, and even then, they'd probably run up to some extraterrestrial pilot and try to pull his rubber face off. I personally have come to the conclusion that no photographic, videographic, or other image is going to be the smoking gun. For every person that says, that is a UFO, there will be a dozen that say, nope, it's a bird, it's a plane, it's, well, you get the idea. Images are not going to do it. There is no way that any image of any UFO is going to be able to prove existence beyond a shadow of a doubt. Unless it is being telecast live by CNN. And even then, there will be those that will state, oh, that's just a War of the Worlds teleplay thing. So, are we doomed to never get proof of the existence of UFOs from an image or images? Well, at first glance, the answer would be a resounding yes. But stop and think for a moment. If our governments could be enticed to bring forth all they know about UFOs and... they were the ones showing us the images. Those are the images that could not be denied. Those images are the ones that have been hidden away because they have what is known as provenance. They are the proof, and many of those images have actually been seen and reported to us by former military personnel. The official images are the ones that will prove beyond a shadow of a doubt the existence of UFOs as soon as they tell us and show them to us. But that's just my take on it.
Dave Furlong, every week at this time. Strange days, indeed.
And I remember Daniel Sheehan on this program, the UFO lawyer from the West Coast, mm-hmm. The Wunderkind lawyer who got into all kinds of craziness in the Richard Nixon days. But Daniel Sheehan,
yeah.
Yeah, saying that he had gotten into the secret Blue Book archives and had seen all kinds of amazing images there stashed away.
But even if he managed to get those images out and show them to us, they're still not going to be proven until we get the official pat on the head.
Yeah, a laser blast from a monstrous mothership up above us. Yeah. You don't believe? Yes. Yeah, you're right. We live in the age of Photoshop and just a wonderful CGI, inexpensive, easily downloadable computer graphics stuff that one can get online now, and you can just pop in a single image in there. Well, create it first in Photoshop and then do it with animation, and it's... Who knows anymore?
Mm-hmm.
Are you sitting there itching to say something, Sue Derrick?
No, not really.
Okay.
hi, Dave. Actually, I do agree with Dave. I don't think that there will be any definitive photo that's going to come out and say, here's your absolute proof by scientific standard. But I do believe there are good images. And what I mean by good images, if you get a clear image, I don't care if it's a triangle, an orb, or whatever, you have something clearly in the foreground, in the background, so we can, you know, get an idea and estimate the size and shape and where this is located. And to me, that's a good photo. And I think that in that case, you would have something that's scientifically valid. A lot of what the skeptic bunkers say, in fact, as far as dust and that sort of thing, is correct. I've seen many photos that I can easily replicate and duplicate, and I've spent hours and hours and hours and had a lot of fun with my camera doing it. And I think we have to be careful what we put out there as ufologists. I'm referring to George Filer's recent Filer's Files, where I saw a photo being,
touted
as a UFO, when in fact I could easily replicate that with a speck of dust or any airborne particle. I think that it is up to us as ufologists, if we're going to put these photos out there, that they should be good and they should be scientifically valid, or at least fall into a criteria where we can, you know, have a good idea of what they might be.
Well, I think part of it too is the we have to get the provenance on the image.
Mm-hmm.
It's sort of like artwork. You know, you can have an image of the Mona Lisa, but you have to get the actual provenance to prove that it was the one that was actually created by Leonardo da Vinci. So, same type of thing here. We need images that are going to have some undeniable provenance to them, and that's the hard part.
Absolutely.
See, it's just all part of the strange days trip, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And you know, maybe they don't want to be photographed either. Who knows?
But they could be camera shy.
Yeah. You know, they could be camouflaged. We don't know.
Mm. Dave, thank you, sir.
Thank you.
It's been good. Sorry about the delay in getting to you. It's it's one of those Saturday nights. You know,
yeah,
the host has a bad cold. The computers are being contrary.
Well, that's so the virus has traveled from... Never mind.
from human to computer, the other way around. Mm.
And he's brought us into the studio to share the warmth.
Yes, a whole 2 hours of sharing the space with moi.
Reminiscent of Independence Day.
Yes, I'm a plant. No. No, I'm an alien plant. Good night, Dave. Thank you.
Good night,
guys. Good night, Dave.
Along with Wayne St. John and Sue Derrick and Matthew Didier, let's say hi to Marie out there in West Scarborough. That must be sort of Outer Beaches, Inner Scarberia. Yes, Marie? Hello, Marie. Fade her up. Locked in? No, I'm locking. There, Marie. Sorry about that.
Well, Well, hopefully everyone's listening to you tonight, Errol. I know I always do. I was just wondering, do you want a UFO question, or can I get a personal reading, or both?
Errol hasn't had that much medication to do personal readings tonight.
But... Yeah, well, I could certainly give it a whirl if you really would like me to. No, I think UFOs will do for tonight, Marie. Hi.
So what would you like?
Well, you just go ahead and ask the question. You had a question?
Well, I wondered if Sue was doing personal readings, but I also have a UFO question if you want me to keep it to that.
Sue has never done personal readings.
No?
No, I'm not a psychic.
Oh, I was confusing with Errol Greywolf for...
Errol Greywolf or perhaps...
Oh, maybe Nikki.
Nikki Derrick?
Well, yes, I know Nikki.
Nikki Derrick. Yeah, that's who.
Yeah, I wish I could. I could make stuff up. But...
No.
A lot of them do.
I can ask. Has there, you know... I've seen some documentaries where people in the States have, you know, they've said they've been abducted and they really believe what they're saying and they're visibly shaken. Have they investigated these people and held them to strict scientific criteria? And I kind of see it as the same as when people have premonitions. It's like you can't prove they had a premonition, but they knew a close loved one was going to be in an accident and... stuff like that. It's kind of like it's so hard to prove UFOs.
It is hard to prove, but in regards to, I'll take the question in regards to abductees.
Yeah.
Yes, they have. There's several wonderful investigators and researchers out there who have spent years working with these people. Some of them very frightened, some of them very traumatized, and absolutely, yes, there is something going on there. I have no doubt. It's a little bit different than ufology in that UFOs, we can investigate nuts and bolts as far as it's an object or it's not an object or we can identify. With the abductees, it becomes a little stranger and a little more human and personal. And personally, I have met several people who have had these experiences, and absolutely, they are 100% sincere, and I am absolutely convinced something is going on with them.
So are they all negative, or is there any positive?
Were you listening last week, Marie? I had a woman by the name of Janet Coley on last week, and she has been working with abductees for many years, and she prefers to call them experiencers.
Were their experiences negative, though? All negative?
No, not at all.
There are a lot of
people who have had really, really good experiences. They've been so good that they have suddenly developed talents, like composing, playing music, suddenly becoming artists where they weren't at all before. Some of them have healing powers as a result of their experiences.
Some invent things.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. May I suggest, if you're really interested in the topic, Dr. John Mack, who has passed on, but he has written several books on the subject, where, yes, these people have had some very positive experiences, or they viewed them as negative to begin with, and then later on were able to come to terms and cope with it and see the positive in the experience itself. So certainly, no, not all of them have been terrible negative experiences.
Also unseen.
Well, I just felt that if they're negative, then they're not of God, really, lower astral realms.
I don't think that has anything to do with the realms. I think we're talking apples and oranges here,
well,
really.
Okay, well, you kind of half my question answered there. Anyway, thank you.
Half is better than nothing.
You're welcome, Marie. I wish I could have answered better.
Okay. No, have a good night.
Thanks, Marie. Good night. Oh. Lower realm. I guess, you know, the thing is with ufology, and most of the people who are seriously involved in it tend to look at things with nice big racing blinkers on, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And all they see is they see the objects, or they see the physical traces of the objects, but they refuse to look beyond that, and there's not a lot of interest in other things, the paranormal. There are many things that could quite possibly be associated with UFOs.
Well, that's what you have me for, Errol. I like the high strangeness.
Well, yes, certainly, and as do I. But the thing is, there are too many people with closed minds on both sides of the fence on this topic.
Absolutely. And I think we have to be open-minded in regards to looking into all possibilities.
Well, therein lies the thing. Basically, I found through my studies, I always say the so-called skeptics. Because to be a skeptic is to doubt, not deny at a hand.
And what exactly?
Yeah. And the so-called skeptics just deny. Yeah. Can't happen. Isn't real. Can't happen. And then you've got, and I hate to use this term, but it's really the overly credulous. It had to happen. It must be. Therefore, it is.
Mm-hmm.
And very rare do you find the people willing to go down the center and go, well, wait a second. You know, there's evidence for both sides here, and we have to examine it all to extrapolate what probably is the truth. If you're too far to one side or the other, you're never going to find it.
Mm. 1-866-866-7387 is the number here, and that will get you in from both Quebec and Ontario toll-free, which is pretty generous, I think, of these stations. Yeah. Anything to add to that,
well,
Wayne St. John?
Yeah, I was thinking the one film that I saw recently, The Secret NASA Transmissions, I found that film to be quite credible, and it was all NASA's footage.
Oh, this was the thing that was put together by the cable guy out on the West Coast here in
Vancouver.
Canada.
That's correct,
right. Yeah.
I have that film, and it's quite amazing. So if anybody can get it on the net or look it up, The Secret NASA Transmissions is an amazing film.
And what it is
amongst others.
Yeah. And this was when NASA transmitted everything from whatever they had up in space, whether it's shuttles or orbiters or whatever it was, to the ground, and it was in the clear. There was no encoding of the images or anything.
That's right, yeah. Pure right.
So he just recorded 24 hours a day on the NASA channels.
Yeah, he had dozens and dozens of hours of tape, and he found three different anomalies.
Mm-hmm.
One was like a little flash. And one was when they shipped up a long antenna. It was 10 miles long, and it broke off, and you could see it traveling. And then what did you see? You saw tens of thousands of what looked like jellyfish in space, and they were coming up,
swimming after it.
Yeah, swimming, coming right up to it, examining and moving away, all sorts of sizes.
Well, it's that footage, what is it, the STS 38 or 33 or 45 or 42, where that object comes up out of the Earth's atmosphere, followed by a flash.
Right.
And this object comes up, and then suddenly makes a hard left-hand left angle, and goes off into space.
Yeah. I've heard that, for 30 years that they do right angles in time and get their acceleration in.
Alfred Lindbergh, although he is not officially with us tonight, is contributing greatly to the program tonight and smiles all the way around among Sue Derrick and Wayne St. John and Matthew James Didier sitting here.
The master of understatement right now, yeah.
Yeah. That call went well.
Yeah.
That everybody understood. I was talking to a famed researcher this week. I don't want to mention his name because, you know, what I'm about to share is not out there officially, but an oncologist somewhere in Ontario was working with just someone who was having heavy depressions, and he was treating him with hypnotherapy. And out of the blue, suddenly this patient started reliving an abduction experience. Not only one experience, but many. And this oncologist was so impressed with this that he called this famed researcher and has become very intrigued with all of this. So that's interesting indeed. You had something that you wanted to get into, Sue Derrick?
Well, I do, but first I want to make a quick comment on what you just said. I wish that more people within the medical profession would take these topics more seriously, because there are very frightened people, abductees, that feel they have nowhere to go as far as traditional Western medicine in regards to their physical and mental symptoms. And I wish that more people would step up to the plate like this oncologist and take some of this stuff seriously.
Mm-hmm.
Hear, hear.
Yeah, absolutely. What I want to do is I just want to make mention, if any of your listeners out there can recall, back to 1981, I am currently investigating a case, and I'm just going to give you a few of the little particulars. Large UFO sighted downtown Toronto, very much a classic disc-shaped UFO. This would have been 11 p.m. sometime mid-March 1981. It was sighted from the Sutton Place Hotel. If anybody else might have seen this or might have information, if you could contact me, that would be great. I am looking for further follow-up information. Now, I know that it's a long time ago and memories fade, but as a UFO experiencer or someone who has seen a UFO many, many years ago, I can tell you that usually when you have these types of experiences, they burn in your memory. You don't forget them. And I'm hoping that someone out there might be able to remember. Maybe they didn't have anyone to report to at the time, or they had no one to come forward to. Again, this would be a large disc-shaped UFO with lights around the bottom that was sighted from the Sutton Place Hotel, 11 p.m., mid-March 1981.
Have you mentioned this on this program before?
No, I have not.
Because I remember somewhere in the dim mists of time, and behind this woolly head that I have this evening, the very same story.
Really?
A report, and for the life of me, I cannot remember where, you know, when or who, but I've heard this one before.
Well, hopefully maybe one of your listeners out there will jog their memory as well. Maybe someone had called in and mentioned this before, but I really am looking for some other witnesses to this event. It would have been, by my calculations, based on what the witness has told me, this would have been about the size of a football field. I am really hoping that there are other witnesses out there.
Yeah, well, it's large enough that there may well have been.
Absolutely.
It's just like over the Queen Elizabeth Hotel in Montreal.
Yes.
You know, those hundreds of people who saw that thing that was monstrous.
Exactly.
So let's try Matt from Burlington. Evening, Matt.
Hey, good evening, Earl.
Good evening, sir. What can we do for you?
Yeah, I've got a question for you and the panel.
Mm-hmm.
To get an opinion. It ties into an anniversary that's coming up this Friday of the first Surveyor 1, the soft landing on the moon,
mm-hmm.
66. And just the opinion, there's some papers written. I've read some things on the moon hoax. You know, did we really go to the moon?
And do you mean Apollo, what was it, 15?
Sure, all the different Apollo landings.
Okay.
And the craft that went up there and the different RVs they took up there. And
first man on the moon, Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin and et cetera, et cetera. Okay.
Exactly.
Basically using the idea of the movie Capricorn 1 as fact. More than fiction.
Exactly.
Yeah, there is. When you're looking at anything where there's questions, you have to look at the overwhelming amount of evidence involved. And realistically, if they hoax the moon landing, boy, did they do a darn good job of it. There is just way too much evidence to say it happened. Some of the technology we're using today, some of the things that we're able to do today, are based on the technology from those shots. It happened. I have absolutely, usually I'm one of the, I get a lot of flack because I'm a waffler. I'm the kind of guy who won't go one way or the other. Well, in this case, no, I'm going to take a stand. No, there is just overwhelming evidence to say that we did do that. The data is there. The people were there. If it would be the most monumental hoax, it would probably be easier to tear down the Brooklyn Bridge and rebuild it with a Lego.
I don't know. There's a lot of, they had a lot of money to play with to try and pull off that hoax.
Yeah, but again, the next question I would ask to someone who buys their beliefs, to what end?
To what end? Oh, well, look at the status of the United States and their status within the world community.
They were doing fine thanks to the evil weapons of mass destruction. They were doing fine thanks to the victories in World War II. Yes, there was the space race with the Russians at the time.
Right.
But to be honest, the Russians were really just sort of going in towards satellites and whatnot, and so were the States. So, no, it just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, no, there's different opinions.
Yeah.
So it's good to hear your opinion on
it. Yeah, it's an opinion. I will be the first person to say that.
Absolutely.
An opinion based on a heck of a lot of fact, but it's an opinion nonetheless.
Yeah.
And I disagree with it. with
his opinion?
Yeah. Yeah.
Really? You believe that the moon
I think the first one was a hoax. The first one absolutely was, because they couldn't do it. They even measured the suits in the opening of the...
The lamb.
Yeah, and it didn't... the suits were larger than the opening. They couldn't... Wayne Green wrote a book, 45 different reasons why it couldn't have gone the first time. Yeah, and they have... You know, there's lots of information for, you know, the other flights, but you know, you'll never see the astronauts together taking pictures arm in arm, you know, and why did these guys fall apart after the first landing?
The three of you, have you looked at the British Condyne report
put out by the Ministry of Defense? There's no such thing. It's absolute nonsense.
Yeah, UFOs are...
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Ignore all the data.
Yeah.
Inconvenient facts. Don't look at them.
Same old news, different day.
Yeah.
Come on.
Well, it's the Condon report. Condon report. And everybody went, ooh, good. The Ministry of Defense is releasing some really important information. I don't know. And it's, why at this time? And it's every time. Who is it was saying was in the last couple of weeks? Every time there's something important going on in the field of ufology, we get one of these crazed denials. Right around the time of the Roswell 50th anniversary, it was the United States Air Force with their parachute test dummies. It seems every time there's some major event coming up in the field, there's always stupidity that comes out of... And these are people who represent the people.
Exactly. You know? Errol, I have a quick question for you. I'd be interested in your opinion in regards to this report that the Brits have put out. Mm. Do you think there's any connection in the timing with the UFO military hacker who is currently fighting extradition to the United States?
Oh, Gary McKinnon.
Yes.
Yeah.
Do you find the timing a little kind
it's,
of
it's
strange.
Kind of interesting. Yeah, it's
a little convenient.
Far too convenient. Interesting. Did you hear or see the interviews that the BBC did with him?
No, you know what? I have it actually on my computer, and I haven't had a chance to actually sit and go through it yet. But I just found the raw footage
is really interesting, because he talks a little about some of the things that he saw there.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
In the NASA
and so
computers.
Because I was going to say, does the report have anything to do... does anything that he discussed have to do with the report that was just released, which, of course, let us all know, thank gosh, that we're all seeing nonsense.
Yeah, no, yeah. It has nothing to do with that.
Oh,
it's
good, okay.
The Condyne report, yes. Which is a mixture of the Condon and Project Sign, which preceded the Air Force's Project Blue Book.
And Grudge, too.
Yeah, but the name is a combination, which was a very strange name to...
And then the movie came out.
On the report.
I find the timing quite
terrible
interesting.
Mm-hmm.
That's my opinion. It may have nothing to do with it, but I do find the timing quite interesting.
Mm.
Well, they love to debunk. I mean, that's part of the game right now.
It makes me crazy, you know. This is supposedly an official Ministry of Defense report out of Britain. And it's put together by one man who apparently was some sort of flying officer in the Royal Air Force. All the media crowed about it being a scientific investigation, and the man wasn't a scientist, he was a pilot.
Well, aren't we kind of used to that when it comes to the auto-debunkers?
Well, yes.
Yeah, the wonderful world of science being bandied about. My favorite one is the fact that you'll always hear about the scientific model, and yet they always ignore the scientific method.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, as usual, a scientific report released by non-scientists.
Science isn't what science does, for the most part. Science is supposed to be exploring brave new horizons, yes? Looking for the least obvious thing. And a lot of the major discoveries over the centuries have been completely by accident.
In this case, science has an agenda that is quite obvious to anybody with even a modicum of
intelligence.
Maintaining
their funding and tenure is the agenda.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Oh, the fun with peer review. Basically, toe the party line. The other thing, too, is you got to wonder, and I've heard this mentioned, too, is if there are certain groups out there who do propagate this kind of nonsense simply because it's easier. I don't need to think outside the box anymore, because I've now got this wonderful report from this non-scientist who tells me I don't have to. I don't have to look into anything magical or mystical, and that's how they see all of this. Mm-hmm. I wish I had a nickel for every time I heard the, you know, you're trying to prove magic. I'm not trying to prove magic, obviously.
Oh, scientific understanding of the problem, obviously. Right.
People who won't read.
Yeah. Yep.
Deny.
Yep.
Well, they don't have time. They're too busy working on their own projects in order to make the funding happen and secure their position and their tenure in their job.
Yeah.
And that's not just science either, is it?
No,
that's,
sounds like fact to me.
Yes. What was it you were saying, Matthew, earlier on about the further up the tree the monkey goes?
Yeah. The more people can see the red.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes.
Very gentle.
So, we have about 3 minutes to go. And now we can sit around and we can sing songs or we can discuss something sensible.
There's something sensible?
Yeah.
Oh, my.
UFOs.
Well, you just told us that it wasn't. There's a report right now that says it wasn't sensible.
Mm.
So now you're telling me to... Oh, my goodness.
And I was about to get my tap shoes out, too. Now.
Yeah. I gave up tap dancing.
No, but you haven't seen Errol in a tutu yet.
Yeah. I gave up tap dancing.
I did want to touch...
I kept falling in the sink.
Okay, we've degenerated. And actually, the one thing I did want to touch back on is the postings that you were talking about earlier with me and James my brain goes out my ear.
James Smith. And what a hard name to remember.
Yeah. Anyway, what he had done is he'd come on to the updates mail list and he'd basically said, oh, isn't this wonderful? We have all these groups and I'm looking around online and all these folks are looking into ghosts and hauntings and they have gone out and bought wonderful scientific equipment to go in and find it. And gosh, wouldn't it be great if ufology did this? Well, ghosts and hauntings, as far as the research goes, is something I've been doing for a little over a decade now. And I had to come in and say, well, no, you know, it looks real good. They can wave an EMF detector with the best of them. The unfortunate part is that, and this is a guesstimate number, but I'm probably lowballing, 99% of them aren't taking mean readings. They're not using them correctly. They're not looking for the right things. And the other thing, too, is, yeah, they're waving around EMF detectors, but no one's correlated this. No one has said, hey, look, we've had phenomena here, and there's EMF readings here. When we were talking earlier about crop circles, and you mentioned the cellular changes, there's correlation.
Yes.
We find a crop circle, we find cellular mutation, we've got an anomaly. Well, I got a bunch of people wandering around right now who've gone out to their local science store, I hope, as opposed to going to a ghost hunting store, waving around EMF detectors going, woohoo, look, this thing's just moved. There's no correlation. There's no correlation even doesn't equal causation. So they're really collecting junk data. It looks good on paper. They feel better. They have, we've often said, they have the machine that goes ping. and I kind of complained about this, and basically it came back around to how that has a lot to do with ufology and how, unfortunately, people have already made up their minds, and now they're just going through and bolstering their own faith with the use of various things to go, woohoo, look how wonderful we are.
Unfortunately, most people sit at home and wait for their their computer screens to go, woohoo. Even out in the field with the technology anymore. It's astounding how few researchers are actually out there doing the work anymore.
That's true. And then the ones that are, you have to question, are they doing the right way? Are they collecting the data the correct way?
Mm.
That sort of was my complaint.
Yeah, and I'm not surprised. It's in every field, in the research, in the paranormal, the strange, it's all the same. The internet killed research. It's just too easy to stay at home. Wayne St. John has continued recording all of his life a new song from his latest album by way of introducing this segment by Wayne, E.T. First Contact. Let's hear some of that song, Wayne St. John.
What if we gave up?
nice. One Love for the Planet, Wayne St. John singing there. He's with us this evening, and who knows, this may be the start of something big for SDI, for Strange Days Indeed. Here with ET First Contact is Wayne St. John.
Well, thank you very much, Errol. I guess I should start off by saying, on the positive note, that I believe in pretty soon ET First Contact. That's maybe a lot to swallow for a lot of people, but if I look back, I can count 37 years that I've been looking into the whole scene of UFOs, etc. 26 years ago, I was in Thornhill, and I saw in a clear night sky, I was watching a group of stars, and all of a sudden, fixated on a certain area, I noticed about six or seven stars all in a row making a move just straight across, if you can imagine, a football field. Well, they were on the long side, and they moved right across and stopped, six or seven stars. And then when they stopped, on the other end of this imaginary football field shape, another six or seven stars moved across slowly and stopped. All took about 10 minutes. And that was my first actual sighting where I felt, hey, this is a safe sighting. It's not like the abductions that Whitley Strieber first came out and reported. And I don't know if you know about Whitley Strieber, but he got $1 million for that book called Communion for his money up front, which basically he was saying it was a true story. And then he went on to go on for Johnny Carson and for years and years do all of the circuits and trying to convince people that he had a real experience, and his family did too. And I read that book deeply, and I thought, you know, something has gone on. This is a real thing. It really did happen to him. The creature on the front looked strange. And then no sooner after Whitley's opening did pictures start coming and showing up. And one year I went to the Chicago UFO, conference, and it was quite evident that there was so much going on, and that it was overwhelming, really. That was the first time I saw the film in the crop, on the crop circles. I think it was Colin. I forget his last name. Maybe
Andrews.
Colin Andrews, yes. Mm-hmm. And Colin showed us a film that went on for about 20 minutes, showing a little disc. He said it was lights around it, but you couldn't see it from our distance. And this little silver disc went across the cornfield and above it. Mm-hmm. And went on, and you watched it for 20 minutes, and then it finally went past a farmer on his tractor, mm-hmm. and then it went out of sight. And then apparently, shortly after that, a crop circle did appear.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of crop circles related to time, a timeline in the last 100 years, they have been very simple. They were very simple. Circles just straight ahead, very simple circles. And like a civilization that begins to become aware that there's way more going on than they can see or ever will see in their lifetime, they come in sort of contact with the unknown, the crop circles have grown in complexity, unbelievable sacred geometry, and wonderful designs. And someone is currently taking a picture of them and putting them on a table and putting a glass of water in the center of the crop circle, and things happen to the water. I'm not sure what it does to it, but I want to try that experiment myself.
It's like purple plates, isn't it?
Yes, exactly. Mm. Yeah, yeah. And so we stress that that we are not alone. We know that for sure. We're definitely not alone. Now, I've been working with several people in the past 15 years that have had abduction experiences. And the one case that was really fascinating us, and I came across information I've never read before, it was just mind-boggling. And I'll proceed a little bit with that story, and I have a little excerpt of a tape to play you, and I'll set it up by giving you an area of the city, which would be Queen Street East at Leslie, between Leslie and Lang Street. And there is a psychic lady who has been involved with a group of abductees who she took down to this area. Now, this area is actually called now the Maple Leaf Forever Park. And the whole area is kind of spooky, if you ask me. Mm. And anybody can go down there and circle around, and you'll see on Lang Street, for instance, there are several houses that are just vacant and boarded up. And so the story goes that there was a triple abduction by this one young man. I guess it would have to be at least 30 years ago. And what had happened was that he was standing on his porch with his mother, and their apartment faced the backside of Queen Street in an alleyway just south of Leslie and Queen. I should say off of Leslie, but the very first alleyway of that's behind Queen is actually where that park is now been placed. And this young man was basically looking up in the sky, and he with his mother and his younger brother, and they saw a UFO come in right over the a grove of trees. And with this incident, the mother decided to go and follow them. So she brought the boys along, and as they were walking up the street, they noticed people coming out of this grove of trees, and these people came out of a craft. And what had happened was this craft had, when it came over top of the grove of trees, which was right by that little park, it let off a flash and then a boom, like a big low boom. And everyone who was in that vicinity of that area were basically blinded, and the sensation was, from what I hear, very much a timeline that they couldn't tell how long they were blinded. It was just one of those things. I'm going to pick up the story in a few minutes, right after the messages. Here we go.
Oh, let the host set that up. Oh, my. I love this story. You've told me this story before, and it's fascinating what's been going on down in that end of the city. I lived very, very close to that area twice.
Right.
Didn't have anything particularly strange happen to me while I was there, but I turned into a very strange man, I think, as much as the result of living down there.
So I was saying that they noticed, the three of them noticed the craft come over the grove of trees, and the craft did a big flash, then a boom happened, and some people appeared out of the grove of trees and came right into where the park is now. Mm. And there were three people. And two women, one man. And so they walked up to Queen Street, which wasn't far, about 200 meters. Mm. And they went across to the north side. And while they were doing that, the mother and the two boys took off behind them. And the mother basically was really interested in to see who these people were and what were they doing. So as she got closer with the boys, they got across to the north side of the street, and the group of people went into a store on the north side of the street. I believe it was Victoria Day weekend, and all the stores are closed except that one. And so what happened, the mother then said to the oldest boy, I want you to go in and buy some popsicles. And she basically pushed him in the door. And he wasn't happy about it, but he went. And when he went inside, he saw a man at the door sort of guarding with a military-type uniform on, blonde. And he saw a woman who basically he stood behind her because he was going to get his popsicles. And he saw her, and she turned around, and she had a space outfit on, but it was a sheer see-through top. And later on, this got the mother worried.
And he is how old?
And he was only 7 or 8 at the time.
Oh, my. Mm.
And when he looked at her, he thought, she looks just like a movie star. And she bent over to speak to him, and he had a sensation after being talked to for a minute or two that he went into some sort of different state, and he felt that she was speaking very deeply and about a lot of things, and he basically felt he couldn't keep up with what she was saying. And so he got the popsicle, the people left the store, and the mother was standing across the street with the other son, and the young boy goes to the mother, and the mother says, let's follow them. So the people go back towards where the craft was, south of Queen, and they're walking slowly. And then the mother and the two boys are starting to walk a little bit faster, and the oldest boy notices that the people are slowing down. So they slow down, and the mother says to the woman, she says, you look like you're dressed up for Halloween. We don't dress up like that here. It's not Halloween. She was a sort of belligerent, nervy kind of woman. And the woman looked at her and said, well, this is the way we dress where we come from. Hmm. And so then they proceeded towards the park itself area, and that's where it all goes blank. The next thing that happens is the three of them wake up in their house the next morning. The popsicles are on a table, and they're melted everywhere. They're just, it's just a mess. And the oldest boy wakes up, and he notices that the same woman that was in the store is behind him, as if she was making sure that they were okay as they woke out of this slumber. And so the youngest boy looked dead at the mother, or I should say the woman, and as if he was taking it all in, as if he remembered. He was going to remember, and it turns out that he did. And after that incident, that was the sort of the very first time that the oldest boy was aware that people were around him that seemed to know him and that were conversing with him, etc. And then he remembered later on, because I worked with him for quite a few years, and he remembered that he had gotten a message in his head before the ship showed up. And what he was doing at the time was, in his bed, he was saying, I'm going to kill myself. I don't want to live anymore. I'm going to kill myself. And something that he's not likely to say as he thinks about it. But he hears a voice saying, don't you do anything. I'll be right there. And that's when proceeded with the ship coming in, et cetera. Mm-hmm. But he remembers this much later. And so that is one of the stories of being around that park. I could play that clip now.
Okay.
Yeah?
Why don't we play that clip? What is this clip we're going to hear?
Yeah, this is Pam Wilson. She's a psychic who was drawn to quite a few people that were abducted in that area and other areas, Caledon, et cetera. Mm. She's going to speak for about a minute and a half and just briefly go over some of what I said, but basically in the same area of town.
Okay, let's roll that.
Roll that.
Well, I have a group that has been abducted by UFOs. So we go around. We've got a place in Caledon, and we go to different areas that are claimed to be places of abductions. So we were down in Queen Street. I don't know about that park, if that's where we went, because I know we were down at Queen Street by the Loblaws, and we walked some of the streets down there, saw some of the big trees, some of the huge big trees that I was told that were there. And also there was mysterious lights and things that were seen in areas down there, which is what people claim before they're abducted. There's these huge beams of light, and then they're put back to where they were, but there was a time loss.
Pam, you said her name was?
Yes. Mm. Pam Wilson, yes.
Pam Wilson.
Mm. Yes.
You've maintained this guy's name is David, you said?
That's correct, yeah.
David, he's still around? You're still
in touch
with him?
Yeah.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Is he interested in talking about it publicly?
Not at this time.
Not at this time.
That's where I come in.
So are there other people who've been through the same kind of thing as David has down there at Queen and Leslie in Toronto?
Apparently, according to Pam, there has been. Mm. But Pam's people experienced abduction where this young man experienced contact.
Yeah.
And it always appeared that these people came to his rescue, if you will. It basically was intervention is what I called it.
Wayne St. John, E.T. First Contact, thank you, sir. Sue Derrick, Matthew Didier, thank you.
Thank you, Errol.
A different kind of night. What were you going to say?
I was going to just give my website.
Oh, yeah. Well, people can get to it via tonight's program listing. We're just right out of time.
Perfect.
Here.
All right.
Yeah. Tonight's program listing, go there and go look at Wayne's website. It's beautiful. Thank you both, Matthew and Sue.
Yeah.
Thank you, Jim Pacheco. Thank you, the very harried Julian McNabb out there in Master Control. And we'll talk to you perhaps with a more clear voice and nose next Saturday night. Good night.
That's this week's edition of Strange Days Indeed, hosted and produced by Errol Bruce Knapp, the executive...